From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1950 in Charlotte, North Carolina. You might have seen the photographs of a 15-year-old girl, an African-American named Dorothy Counts. She's walking to her newly integrated school. She's surrounded. It's a still image, of course, but you can see the taunts, the derision, the white people spitting at her, the hatred and the condescension, and the lack of acceptance. Now, in Paris, France, the novelist and playwright James Baldwin saw that photograph. Here's what Baldwin wrote about seeing what was happening to Dorothy Counts. Quote, "There was unutterable pride, tension, and anguish in that girl's face as she approached the halls of learning with history jeering back at her. It made me furious. It filled me with both hatred and pity, and it made me ashamed. Some one of us should have been there with her." End quote. Well, Baldwin decided that he had to return to the United States. He had to get more involved and, as he put it, go home and pay some dues. In the years to come, he would build friendships with Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King Jr. His friends, of course, would be assassinated one by one as the civil rights movement roiled. And he would begin writing a book about his friendships and his country called Remember This House. But by the time Baldwin died in 1987, he had completed only 30 pages of the book. Raoul Peck obtained those pages and some notes, and he's created a film that fills out where he thinks Baldwin would have taken that book, particularly in light of what's going on now. His film is called I Am Not Your Negro, and it's a searing portrait of race in the 1960s, yes, but race today, and how we might not have made as much progress as we might like to believe. The film links the 1960s to Black Lives Matter, and it asks us to look within. You can see the film on Friday evening at the Little Theater, and if you care about ratings, critics have praised it endlessly. It's got 98% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. It's just a remarkable film. The screening on Friday will include a panel discussion afterwards, and we're here to discuss all of that and more with you this hour with our guests. Richard McCullough is a meteorologist and president of the Rochester Association of Black Journalists. Richard, always great to have you. Thank you for being here.
Great seeing you again, Evan.
Dr. David Anderson's here. He has a longer resume than I could probably relate, but I will just say he's a history reenactor and a community leader, among many other things. Dr. Anderson, nice to have you as well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Bree Merkel is the artistic director for the Little Theater. And Bree, big event coming up on Friday. What time on Friday, by the way, Bree?
It's going to be 6:30 p.m. on Friday, and tickets are selling really fast. So we recommend that you buy your tickets early.
Okay, so 6:30 p.m. Tickets are how much, Bree?
Tickets are our regular prices, $9 and $6 for students and seniors.
And Richard, the panel discussion following the film, yes?
Yes, we're having a panel discussion following the film, and we're looking forward to getting some insights from individuals. We have some individuals, for example, Takiya Graham, educator, activist, James Baldwin, scholar. We have David Shakes, local actor, Nate Brown, who is host of WHTK's talk show. And we expect to have a lively conversation after the film.
Yeah, I imagine we will. Richard, it's a remarkable film, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, it really is. I think that one of the reasons why RABJ is interested in showing these kind of films is to educate our young people about history, about what we've gone through as a country, and to appreciate the sacrifices that people have made to make us where we are today, to give us some sense of what's happened over the years. And we should understand how divisive these issues were. Race was and civil rights, a big issue then and today as well.
No question about it. Dr. Anderson, you have had a chance to see the film?
I haven't. I'm looking forward
to
it.
Okay. What do you sense about the writings of Baldwin, who, you know, I mean, in many ways, I don't want to say he's a forgotten voice, but in white America, they may be less familiar with Baldwin. And he has some profound things to say. We will have a clip coming up here from the film in his own voice. But do you have any expectations or ideas for what you might see on Friday?
I'm wide open at this point. But, of course, it'll be good to have memories about Baldwin rekindled. And I'm hoping that the audience will appreciate how pointed he was in trying to deal with the, shall we say, the largest social issues in perhaps the world, certainly in America.
No question about that. And so, listeners, if you want to join the conversation this hour, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Bree, have you had a chance to see the film?
I have, yes.
How did it hit you?
I thought it was incredibly powerful. The minute I watched it, I think I got in touch with everybody and said, we have to play this movie. What really struck me was when you saw there's footage of James Baldwin talking on a television show. Yeah. And the things he's saying, someone could be sitting and someone could be saying it right now in this studio. You know, it just felt like it was 2017, and that was really sad to see.
It's interesting that you say that. I'd like to listen to a clip, if we could, from the film. And this is a lengthy clip, but it is Baldwin in his own words. What you won't see, obviously, until you see the film, but what in this clip, you not only hear Baldwin's words, you see it juxtaposed with images of Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin. So to Bree's point about how it feels still current, that's exactly what the filmmaker's doing here. Let's listen to Baldwin from his own words from the film.
I know how you watch as you grow older. This is not a figure of speech. The corpses of your brothers and your sisters pile up around you, and not for anything they have done. They were too young to have done anything. But what one does realize is that when you try to stand up and look the world in the face like you had a right to be here, you have attacked the entire power structure of the Western world. Forget the Negro problem. Don't write any voting acts. We had that, it's called the 15th Amendment. During the Civil Rights Bill of 1964, what you had to look at is what is happening in this country. And what is really happening is a brother has murdered brother knowing it was his brother. White men have lynched Negroes knowing them to be their sons. White women have had Negroes burned knowing them to be their lovers. It is not a racial problem. It's a problem whether or not you're willing to look at your life and be responsible for it and then begin to change it. That great Western house I come from is one house, and I am one of the children of that house. Cindy, I'm the most despised child of that house. And it is because the American people are unable to face the fact that, in fact, I am flesh of their flesh, bone of their bone, created by them. My blood, my father's blood is in that soil.
That's James Baldwin in his own words from a clip from the film, I Am Not Your Negro. Dr. Anderson, can you tell us how you're feeling listening to those words from Baldwin?
How we need such words now, and the whole image of the man, how intense he was. Every image we saw of him in those days, it was intense. As if he knew that soon there would be no more James Baldwin walking and talking and emphasizing what needed to be emphasized. He was a man on a journey with an issue, with a direction, and he used his time well.
It's remarkable to hear him say that we watch corpses pile up of children, of young people, not for anything they have done. They were too young to have done anything. He never met Richard McCullough. He never met Tamir Rice, obviously. He never met Trayvon Martin, obviously. It's profound to me, though, when you juxtapose those words with these images. How do you feel?
Well, it's think about it. I let me step back here. He's an artist. He's a writer. And he's in touch with what was going on at the time. And he spoke for a lot of people. A lot of people didn't have the airwaves. So he was expressing the feelings and the hopes and desires of a lot of people. And he was unapologetic. And he told it like it was. And what he said at that time reflected the era where you had children that were killed by bombs in churches, and you had people that were maimed, and dogs were on, you know, used to control them and so forth. So it's a sad time in our history, but we have to face that history, and we have to see these kind of films to understand where we are in this world. And I hope that we get millennials there to see the film. I hope we get young people to see this film, because you need to see, I mean, everything wasn't, the world was quite different back then, but you don't want to go back to that. you know, but you want to see it and appreciate the sacrifices that these people made for us to be here today.
Let me grab our first phone call, and it's Kevin Hicks on the phone. Kevin, how are you? Thanks for taking the time.
Yes, thank you for having me. I just wanted to kind of mention my getting familiar with Baldwin, growing up going to a suburban white school district, Penfield, and we had to do book reports in like 7th, 8th grade. And so I was able to pull off my father's bookshelf, Go Tell It on the Mountain, and, you know, a lot of his different works and plays. And it just was interesting to the reaction of my white classmates who, you know, that was just all new to them. But then even when I went to college, a historically black college, and you're taking classes in literature, and that was new to some of my fellow students. And so I did get a chance to, when I think it was James Baldwin's last appearance here in Rochester, when he was at the Xerox Auditorium, to hear him, and I felt lucky to have been able to take advantage of that. And I also just wanted to say that beside this film that's coming up Friday, if people want to hear more about James Baldwin, during the Bronze Collective Theater Fest is coming up February 20th to 26th. On February 23rd, there's going to be a stage play reading of his Blues for Mr. Charlie, which is a phenomenal work that's tied to, and I believe inspired by, the Emmett Till killing. So people can go to the MUCC website and get information about that.
MUCCC, the Multi-Use Cultural Community Center, is what Kevin's talking about. And Kevin, this is a good moment for you to remind the audience, if they don't know what Bronze Collective is. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a week's infusion of African-American theater, and this is our third year of it. And it's going to have drama, poetry, just a number of different dance, a number of different genres. So there's a whole new mix of fresh lineup of acts this year, and we invite people to check it out.
Kevin, before I let you go, I will say that since having a chance to read more about Baldwin, I find it interesting. I did not know that he was quite a critic of Hollywood, of film culture, of how film often either erased people of color or promoted white actors at the expense of actors of color. He had a lot to say about that. It makes me wonder what Baldwin would say in 2017 about recent controversies in Hollywood, about portrayal. Any thoughts about that?
Oh, indeed. I mean, I'm sure he would agree with the director of the film, who I had a chance to hear in different interviews, just talking about just the whole process of getting a film to be approved or greenlit. I mean, you know, right now, of course, you've got the Hidden Figures, which is doing great at the box office, but, you know, how long did it take to get that to the screen? And you still need to get African-Americans and Latinos and other underrepresented people in those places where they're able to make the decisions to have those films brought to the public.
So, Kevin, one more time, the Baldwin reading, in particular with Bronze Collective, is when at the MUCC?
The Bronze Collective Theater Fest is going to be February 20th to the 26th at 7:30 p.m. nightly, with the exception of a 2 p.m. Sunday matinee. And the Blues for Mr. Charlie by James Baldwin, and it's being directed by very well known local director Gary DeWitt Marshall. That's going to be Thursday, February 23rd at 7:30 p.m. And again, it's a reading. It's a stage reading. So it's going to be the price will be $15 that night.
Kevin, thank you. It's always nice to talk to you. Appreciate you calling in.
Thank you.
All right, Kevin Hicks joining the program there, and Richard, is just sort of a reminder, talking to Kevin now, I recall a year ago talking about Bronze Collective coming up, and again, yeah, about how voices sometimes are excluded by power structures, by society. I mean, I laugh only because I'm uncomfortable or sad about it, but I mean, I think he's making some very important points about Baldwin. It's nice to see Baldwin's work on stage still.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, you know, it's during when societies are having strife and there's a lot of divisiveness during those kind of things in society, art really flourishes. And we've seen that many times, not only here in the United States, but, you know, around the world. So yes, you know, his works, his plays flourished. They were a reflection of the times. They were a reflection of experiences. He had a rough upbringing, by the way. He was hated. He didn't have a good childhood at all. I you know, from what I remember, it was hard for him. He was, you know, considered ugly and you know, no one wanted him and that kind of thing. But he, his plays reflected the times, and that's, you know, how you gauge a good artist. He's able to harness what is happening around him in the society and put it artistically together so that he can show it to other people and people can learn something, gain something from it. So absolutely.
I want to clarify a point here. CJ wrote to the program and said, any other dates and times to see I Am Not Your Negro in our area, or is it only on Friday? Bree Merkel?
It's actually going to be playing a bunch of other showtimes after Friday as well. Friday's its opening night. We'll have limited showtimes throughout the rest of February and maybe even beyond, depending on how long the run goes for. So there will be other chances to catch
that's him. Great. And you can always find schedules online where?
www.thelittle.org.
Thelittle.org. So CJ, thank you for that on the clarification. Lucien in Pittsford is next on the phones. Go ahead, Lucien.
Hello, thank you. It's an opportunity to be on the air. I am from Haiti, as is Raoul Peck. I am so happy that Baldwin's work has been treated through the lens of Raoul Peck. Why? Because being from Haiti, I definitely see parallels between what the struggle for our black nation here in America has to go through for having the audacity to want their own liberation, to name it, to call it, and to fight to own it. The Haitian struggle is so similar to what the American, well, blacks like me in America, still are fighting today. I think that Raoul Peck is really well positioned to translate what happens when you have the audacity to want your own liberation. I'm so looking forward to the viewing, Oh, I'm Not Your Negro, because this is struggle is not just a struggle for the Americans who are black in this nation or the Haitians like myself. This is a universal struggle for all people fighting for their liberation, and it's a struggle that needs to continue. Thank you for the viewing at the Little Theater, and I will be there.
Lucien, thank you very much.
You know, people of color, we can all, our brothers and sisters in Haiti and all parts of the world, our people of color, we all relate. We can all relate. We all have a lineage. We all have a common ancestry. And I think people can relate to the stories universally across the board. No question about that. So we look forward to having as many people there as possible. And we look forward to a lively discussion about the film and the significance of the film as portrayed in the film from the 60s to what's been happening recently with the killings of these young men, you know, unfortunately, in the streets here.
If you're just joining us, the film that Richard's talking about is called I Am Not Your Negro. Director Raoul Peck put the film together based on 30 pages of a manuscript that the playwright, that the writer, the essayist James Baldwin had been writing on. He started in 1979, and by the time he died in 1987, he had only written 30 pages, but was writing kind of the story of America or the story of race through his friendships with Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X. And now Peck has taken that 30 pages and built this film connecting what Baldwin had experienced in the 50s, 60s, 70s that inspired him to start that work and connecting it to today and asking ourselves how much progress has been made. Now, Dr. Anderson, you know, I was struck really sharply by looking at those photographs from the 1950s, from the 1960s, of African-American children just trying to go to school and surrounded by crowds of people. And as I said in the introduction to this hour, they may be still photographs, but you don't have to doubt the tension of that moment, the derision, the pointing, sometimes the shouting, laughing, spitting. And maybe we don't see that today. Maybe some would argue, well, we don't see that today. But I look at how self-segregated our schools are, how our communities are, and it does make me wonder what the word progress means in this context, with schools, with segregation, with opportunity. What should progress mean to you? How do you feel about that, Dr. Anderson?
Progress, for me, is best measured in the behavior of African-American people. There's always an alternative to striking back with a weapon or even the closed fist. But it is to walk tall. It is to be erect and correct in one's behavior, to earn within the culture itself, the black culture itself, the right to be called woman or man, friend, ally. And it is as more and more people are able to do this, despite what contradictions come from whomever, it is a win for both African Americans and for the nation. And it is essential that we have such wins. Else, as Maya Angelou would say, this little bit of spit and sand we call Earth will go whirling out into space, never to be seen again. In other words, it's up to us to both earn the respect of each other and people of other cultural, racial backgrounds, but and in the process, make America stronger, more beloved, a welcoming place that will help the world to survive and even blossom.
Dr. Anderson, this film is an important reminder that sometimes I think people like me, people in the media, speak a little too monolithically about the so-called black community or black leadership. Mm-hmm. And the film gives you Martin Luther King at times, in his own words, being interviewed, Malcolm X, and you see the difference in approach at times. King, at times, was criticized as, quote, playing into white power hands and being too passive. Well, here you are telling us that progress to you is the measured response. And I wonder if you feel that Dr. King's formulation on peaceful protest, on standing up strongly but without violence, if that has or should win the day versus those who feel the frustration and have a hard time containing, you know, sort of a peaceful sentiment. How do you feel about that?
I feel that we must remember it, study it, engage with it in conversation with each other, and use it to the next rung of the ladder we're trying to climb up. It is, for its time, it was essential. It was the right thing to do. It was effective, and it must be remembered and honored. We don't make a saint out of Dr. King. We don't make a bad boy out of Malcolm X. We take all of it and learn from it and do better because we are better armed and informed.
You agree, Richard?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, there were different approaches, obviously. Dr. King, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers, but I think synergistically, together, all of those efforts worked. And I think that when you think about the civil rights movement, primarily it was a peaceful movement. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at the March on Washington and the march across the, you know, in Selma and so forth, those were peaceful marches. You had violence as well, but it all seemed to work together. It seems to me all of those different those efforts reflected the sentiments of societies, the sentiments of people, individuals, and communities. I think they all worked to help in some kind of way. Yeah.
The film shows at 6:30 on Friday night at the Little Theater, and as Bree Merkel points out, you can see it. If you can't get out Friday night, you'll have other chances to see it at the Little, but if you go on Friday, there's a panel discussion afterward. Richard and others will be there for that. You can participate. So it's a great opportunity to see this film that has been so highly praised by critics, I Am Not Your Negro. We're going to get our only break of the hour. Sam in Rochester, John and Henrietta, we're coming back to you on the phones. And for the remainder of the program, you want to weigh in on some of these themes we're discussing? It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. We're right back. Coming up in our second hour, you probably heard that the circus is shutting down in May, ending its run, and a lot of the reason focuses on the use of animals. The circus stopped using elephants last year. Ticket sales have been way down. Animal rights activists have said this is what needs to happen, not just with circuses, but we're going to look at marine parks, zoos, have a conversation about the future of animals in captivity next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A brief interjection from my colleague Gene Fisher from down the hall. Hi, Gene.
Hello, Evan, and thank you for letting me sit in on this wonderful discussion for just a couple of minutes. And I've got something that I want to say because I've been just so moved by the conversation and I've been enthralled by it. I almost couldn't get up from my desk to come in here and talk to you. And, you know, folks don't listen to Connections to have their opinions confirmed. We tune in for thought-provoking conversations from people on all sides of the issues. Now, there are a lot of media outlets out there that are going to give you a partisan echo chamber, but not Connections. Because, as you know from listening to Evan, we're not afraid of complicated issues, strong opinions, or even heated debates. We jump into those conversations with both feet because we know it's good for the community to open this dialogue. And we know that you're open to hearing something that might challenge your own beliefs. Well, these conversations happen here on WXXI and WRUR and WEOS, thanks to the financial support of our listeners. So we're taking just a couple of minutes to ask you to contribute to support radio that doesn't shy away from difficult topics or differing opinions. You can make a gift online at WXXINews.org, and you can also contribute at WEOS.org. Now, where else are you going to hear a thoughtful or thought-provoking discussion about this powerful film, I Am Not Your Negro? Think back just a couple of months to our series, Degrees of Diversity, and the amazing live forum that was broadcast from the Little Theater. We took a long, hard look at the lack of diversity in the education system and its effects on students and teachers and families. Or just a couple of weeks ago, our Dialogue on Disability initiative, we heard from or about Gabe Weil, who is dealing with muscular dystrophy. On Connections, we work really hard to make sure that all voices are included in the dialogue, even yours. But this is only made possible by listener support. We're not a commercial radio station, so we depend on listeners like you to make annual or monthly contributions to support this kind of programming. Please make your gift now at WXXINews.org or at WEOS.org. And thank you so much for supporting and for listening to and participating in Connections.
Gene, thank you. Great to see you. I appreciate that message. I want to get back to your phone calls and continue the conversation with our listeners. Sam in Rochester is next. Go ahead, Sam.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was listening to what you were saying, Evan, about, you know, people that used to go to high school and you didn't, you know, see that much where they were spitting on people and arguing with people and hitting people. I don't know where you've been, Evan, but that has not subsided. Do you realize just a few years ago that in Texas they put a black man behind a truck with a rope around his neck and drug him till there was nothing left of his body? Do you realize, Evan, that there was some kids in Texas that beat a guy and set him on fire, and he's now in a mental institution? Do you realize that these things are still going? Just come forward. Do you realize when this president was put in office in 2008, that there was people standing outside spitting on people, hurling insults at people, calling them out of their name? And that has not subsided in America. That has gotten worse. And while Mr. Baldwin was in France learning his skill, getting educated, he probably went there because it would be better for him than it would be here in the United States. All the other kids that was here, they was going from city to city, but he went to a place that was going to be more advantageous for him. And if you look at the record, a lot of people, our black artists, have left the United States and went out of the country, like in England, and that's where they got their recognition. And then they came back to America, and then America could appreciate them for the work in which they've done. But we in America always appreciate what other people have done, you know, after they're gone. And we give them no credit while they're still here. And that's when we can do that, then we will be the America that we ought to be. And when we can come together and be a melting pot and love each other and care for each other, you know, you don't have to leave this country to do that, to get your fame and get your recognition, because some of that is still going on in America now. Still going on in America now. Look, if you go around some of the white high schools and just listen to the conversation, if you get on the email and see some of the information that come out of those high schools about, you know, the black basketball players and the white basketball players, they got N-word all over the internet when you hear that. So I don't know where you've been, Evan. Not to have seen some of this going on here, and some of this happening right here in the city of Rochester.
Yes, sir. Yes, and Sam, let me first say, you're absolutely right. And those incidents, I'm not at all denying them. The only point I was making, in fact, I think, Sam, you and I agree largely on this. I think the point I was trying to make was, I think it's always perilous to speak over generally, and I don't want to speak over generally, but let me, at the risk of doing that, let me say something here that kind of explains where my thinking is. Sometimes I think white America or white Americans think, well, you know, there's a picture of Dorothy Counts getting spit on by a crowd. And Sam, it wasn't spit on, as you know, by one person. I mean, there are hundreds of people just following this 15-year-old girl as she walks to school, and they are all shouting, or they're mocking, they're taunting, they're holding signs. There are kids holding signs. And I think in 2017, sometimes white Americans will say, well, that doesn't happen. You know, yes, the incidents Sam just described, my goodness, they're horrifying. But for the most part, kids can go to school with other kids, and that doesn't happen on a daily basis. And what I'm saying, Sam, is we can't delude ourselves into thinking, well, there's no problems then, right? You know, Dorothy Counts would be able to walk without being targeted by a crowd these days. But you're right. And this film has forced all of us to ask ourselves what progress really means, what it looks like, if this is enough. And of course, it isn't enough. But to, I think, a shocking number of people, they think it is enough. And so that's what the film is about. But Sam, you're right. I mean, Richard, he's right, isn't he?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that this is why I have to go back to why we show films like this and why we wanted to join with The Little, which is to make sure that we keep this type of history, this type of moment alive in the community so that we can talk about it, discuss it. Like, we can't hide from this. You know, there's too many things that happened before that are happening now. So let's talk about it here in Rochester. Let me say also, I think, to talk about what Dr. Anderson, to tag on what he was saying, I think education is so important. You know, education is vitally important. We need to make sure that the fights that our ancestors fought for us, the sacrifices that they made for us and for this generation, we need to carry that baton, and we need to graduate from high school. We need to learn skills. You know, we need to have pride in ourselves and excel. Now, I used to teach in the city school district, and the graduation rate was poor. But the reason why I did that was because I wanted to see if I could have some kind of effect and help inspire some young people. So education is vitally important. And another thing of what the caller was saying about the the black artists going to Europe? Absolutely. Many black artists went to Europe. Josephine Baker, for example, she was a star, you know, in abroad. And a lot of African-American artists went to Europe, Italy, France, England, and they were loved and appreciated. And they didn't face the kind of racism that they faced here in this country. And there are people today that I know that they have sent their kids to other countries in Europe and have done very well. So that's all very true. But it all comes back to facing this kind of history and talking about it and having a discussion.
Dr. Anderson, to Sam's point that we still have so much division and so much pain and sometimes racially based violence today, again, I'll ask you the same thing I asked Richard there. I mean, I can't possibly dispute that, and I wouldn't want to, right? We have to confront it, don't we?
Of course, of course. And what plays out today is less organized in the way the bands, both Citizen and police and others in Little Rock, were organized to keep the handful of black students from carrying out a court order and doing what they were supposed to do. Well, that did end. We finally got action from the federal government. President Eisenhower moved in ways that we couldn't have imagined. But given those examples of what we had to go through, let's learn from them and do what we can do with the other skills and attitudes and teaching that has been out there. Not everyone pays attention to the teaching, but it's there, and this film is a part of that, as I understand it. I'm going to be there, all right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's talking about Friday night at the Little Theater, 6:30 p.m., Bree Merkel from the Little Theater. Tickets for I Am Not Your Negro, the first showing of the Little Theater with the panel discussion. How much are tickets?
Tickets are $9 and $6 for students and seniors.
And you said they are moving, though. You probably want
to
make sure.
Yeah, we only have 50 tickets left right now.
Wow.
So it's going to be selling out really quickly. So if you're thinking of buying, there will be additional show times, as we mentioned, throughout the rest of February.
Okay, John and Henrietta on the phone is next. Go ahead, John.
Hi, I wanted to just a couple things real quick. Point out that Jeffrey Brown interviewed Raoul Peck last week, I think, or early this past week on PBS NewsHour, a fabulous interview with cuts from the movie and conversations about that. Then Charlie Rose interviewed Raoul Peck, and then more recently Tavis Smiley interviewed Raoul Peck. And I highly recommend all three interviews for those who could find them online. They're probably linked, hopefully are linked, and that would be great preparation for anyone who wants to see this movie. And for those who aren't sure, I recommend any of those three. They'll probably get you to go, if not Friday night, one of the others. And what I want to say, one of the things that I learned, because I'm a child of the 60s, I remember James Baldwin. I read him as an undergraduate. Is that he was, although many people, when I bring up his name to folks older than I am, I'm just ending out my, yesterday was my 69th birthday. As I know people older than I am who are still alive, if I bring up James Baldwin, oftentimes the reaction is, oh, that radical. And if you watch just these three interviews with just cuts from the movie, you realize, and you listen to Raoul Peck, he was not radical at all. You can hear a certain amount of anger and angst in his voice, but as Raoul points out, he actually loved everybody, and that's why he was able to be on television oftentimes in the 60s when others from the black community were not. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, certainly it does, John. I mean, I just wonder, do you get the label radical because deep down, people might realize that the structure of power is a zero-sum game. And if we're going to admit advantage and the way the system has been created, it will require a little bit of a shift in and a willingness to say, okay, maybe I lose something, and therefore anyone who wants to disrupt it is a radical. I mean, that is a guess. That is a super uneducated guess on my part, but I don't know how else James Baldwin becomes a radical. You know what I mean, Jim?
Yeah, I do. And I think it's regrettable that people might, some of us are going to go to our graves not realizing what he was trying to say, and hopefully those younger folks will begin to realize what he was saying and help repair the results of institutionalized racism in this country.
Indeed.
Yeah.
John, thank you for the phone call.
You're welcome.
Very much appreciated. He's reminding us, Charlie Rose, Tavis Smiley, with interviews with Raoul Peck, the director of the film. He's saying, you know, he's flagged those, grab them and watch them. And as Bree told you, get tickets early because it's going to sell out on Friday night, and then you'll have some other chances to see it. Stephen in Rochester on the phones. Go ahead, Stephen.
Hi. I had a question about the legacy of Dr. King and Malcolm X. Martin Luther King Day a week ago, mm-hmm. a good friend of mine posted on Facebook. He's African American. I'm white. He posted about how Dr. King's legacy belonged to African Americans more than anyone else. And I'm okay with him saying that. I'm not, like, upset or anything, but he's like an American hero to me. And I just was wondering if the panel could consider how Martin Luther King and other leaders of the civil rights movement can be viewed as both, you know, specifically African American heroes, and then also to all Americans who see them as striving to enjoy the rights that we all get.
Thank you, Stephen. Richard McCauley, you want to start?
Well, obviously, I mean, we can relate to him. People of color can relate to Dr. King because he's an African-American. Obviously, he's a hero to us. But he is also indeed an American hero. That's why America is composed of different complexions and different colors and different ethnic groups. So, yes, he's also an American figure. He will always be so. He's been elevated to that status, but certainly in the grassroots when we were growing up, he was an African American hero. He was a voice. He was fighting for rights and jobs, and in a very baser way he is, but he is ultimately, yes, he's an American hero. He's an American figure, and everybody can learn something from what he fought for.
Let me ask Dr. Anderson an extension of Stephen's question, which I think is a very good and important one. I think kids grow up learning about Dr. King, and they learn the I Have a Dream speech. But sometimes, from what I have experienced just watching the American educational system, and I'll be glad to be wrong, but sometimes that's largely it. Or you learn a speech, or maybe you memorize part of a speech. Mm-hmm. But Dr. King had profound writings, mm-hmm. from his letters to all kinds of other writings that we could spend a lot more time with, that would create more of the real person of Dr. King, the, mm-hmm. the complex and beautiful and thoughtful and profound Dr. King, beyond the amazing I Have a Dream speech, in the way that we also don't really have kids reading Baldwin. I mean, we learned a couple months ago when we did the Degrees of Diversity series, there are African-American parents and grandparents in the suburbs of Monroe County right now saying, where are the black protagonists? Where are the authors of color? How come reading lists are all white? So I wonder, Dr. Anderson, if part of the answer to Stephen's question is to continue to create an idea of Dr. King as a hero, but a real person, and for that we have to spend more time with it, to really read in depth or at length as opposed to one speech. Does that make sense?
Sure, and I would encourage parents and teachers to therefore be in dialogue with parents about Little Michael, which was King's original name, Michael. And the story is that he and his father were persuaded by the grandfather to take on the name Martin after, I believe it was, the father visited Germany and got the experience of learning how Protestant religion came into being, Martin Luther being excommunicated from his Catholic church, becomes the forerunner, the creator of Protestantism. And this was it helped to enable Martin to deal with some of the stuff that was happening on the streets in his neighborhood. He lived in a neighborhood, a nice neighborhood, quote unquote, at the same time played with little white boys who lived in a building where their parents had a store on the first level and they lived on the second level. And there came a day when the little white boys said, "We can't play with you anymore," and they were using the N-word, and Martin, brokenhearted, runs to his parents, spewing out, he hates him. He hates white people. He hates white people. And both mother and then daddy, Martin talks about the big knees of his father, sits him on his knees and gives him a lesson in both humility and strength, and telling him that he has no right to be hating anyone. He's got limited amount of time on earth. Deal with loving, finding a way to love. And by the way, your grandfather and I have agreed that we shall take on the name Martin. And it's that kind of consultation between parent and child that is so essential in getting rid of the extremities, the extreme stuff anyway, so that they can deal with human beings as human beings, as opposed to effigies and figures of hate.
Back to the phones, Jane in Rochester next. Hi, Jane, go ahead.
Hi. I just want to vehemently disagree with one of your callers. I feel that Martin King belongs to me. He was a very important part of when I was of my growing up, and he represented hope to me that we would find a better way to do things. And he was very concerned about poverty, and that was class race. That was all of us who suffer from poverty for whatever reasons. He was, some people say that being against Vietnam, being anti-war, may have contributed to his assassination. And he had the Poor People's March to Washington, which I watched in real time. And it was profoundly changing to a lot of people. And I think it made a lot of us better people, more conscious of the world we lived in, and just so inspired. And without him, I would have had some deficits in my outlook, possibly. But he just meant so much. And, of course, the civil rights legislation, it touched so many people. We managed to get women into that. And I thank him so much for that. But his class consciousness and his just awareness of poverty, the evils of poverty. But I just want to say that I think he belongs to me also. Thank you.
Jane, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate that. Richard, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely right. He's my hero. I grew up with him. There's no question about that. I totally agree with her.
I want to mention as well here, I'd be remiss if I did not say that Bree Merkel from the Little Theater should mention that the Black Cinema series as a whole is something we should know about. Tell us a little bit about that, Bree.
Yeah, so we decided that we wanted to start a new series that took something we had been doing, which was a Black History Month screenings, a step further. And we really want to make a commitment and be a community forum year-round and celebrate what's great about Black cinema, whether it be a documentary like this or a narrative film. So this is kind of our kickoff to the series. We're really happy to have the Rochester Association of Black Journalists partnering with us on the series. So they'll be helping to pick the films and be really getting great discussions after all of the films. We're about to pick our March film, so stay tuned for that. If you come to the show on Friday, we're going to announce that one. But it'll be every month, and we're gonna keep it going.
Mm-hmm. A lot of responsibility on RABJ there, Richard.
Oh yeah, we're very excited about the partnership. We're all film buffs. We like to watch films and films that move you emotionally and films that educate you and stimulate conversation. So we're looking forward to the partnership for this year, 2017. We're looking forward to making sure that the public is aware of our films that we're going to feature, and we want to invite the public to come and sit with us and have a conversation about these films. Some of them might be very controversial. Some of them, we're going to have a variety of them. So, just stay tuned.
Peter called in from East Rochester just to say that if you're looking for more reading from Dr. King, the letter from jail in Birmingham is excellent and worth reading, just because it was shared by a number of people around the holiday recently. I had a chance to reread that recently, and I agree, Peter. That is a beautiful one. Down to about our last 30 seconds. Dr. Anderson, final word to you, sir. You know, this is, again, a big, broad question. This film really makes me look inward, hopefully makes us all look inward. Is this a moment of optimism for you? How are you feeling about your country right now?
I'm always feeling positive about my country. We killed more Americans during the Civil War than any other time in history, but we did get an end to slavery coming out of it. And it's up to us to take that which was handed to us, bloody as it was, and make something crystal clear and sweet and honorable, and go ahead and be human for the rest of whatever God will give us.
Dr. David Anderson, it's been my honor to have you here this hour, sir. Thank you so much. We'll see you Friday at the Little Theater. He's looking across saying, can I still get a ticket? I think they'll make sure. Richard McCullough, who's the president of the Rochester Association of Black Journalists. Thank you, Richard. Always great having you here.
Thank you, Evan.
We'll see you Friday.
You're looking forward to it.
And Bree Merkel, who lives at the Little Theater. We'll see you there
as well.
See you
on Friday.
Friday night, 6:30. Get tickets now. There's fewer than 50 remaining. They're going to sell it out for I Am Not Your Negro, this powerful film. 6:30 on Friday. If you can't get in Friday, there will be more opportunities. Check out thelittle.org. Short break, more connections next.